Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. Have alongside with me my co-host, my friend Parker Fleming. Parker, how you doing?
Grant, I'm doing great this evening. We've had a full week of recording at the BetUS College Football Show. Was fortunate enough to be back on Three Dog Thursday this week. I won. I went 2-1 last week. So kind of a little game show they do. That was fun. Got to record that again today. And legitimately excited about TCU football for the first time in a really long time. It's a weird space, man.
Yeah, I texted you this earlier. I really don't know what to do with my hands going into this game, and we'll get to it later, like what happens if TCU does win. But it's a level of excitement I haven't felt since, man, I don't know. I feel in that 2017 season, maybe going into the Iowa State game, but I think that's it.
Yeah. You kind of at some point knew that knew that TCU was a little bit doomed there. Grant, I tweeted this out just before we got on air and said, I know we have to preview Oklahoma State, but I'm kind of in the mood to just spend the entire episode talking about the song Feeling Good Again by Robert Earl Keen, which I am convinced every listen might be the best country song that's been written during my lifetime. For a multitude of reasons, but I'm going to take us actually an entirely different way than talking about country music. So I'm going to hijack the conversation for a minute, and I want to do a little impromptu State of the Frogs and kind of throw at you a little working theory I have and just see how it gels with you. Is that all right?
Sure.
We have it like you can say no at this point, right?
No, I will. I know. Yeah. I didn't know what Parker was going to say, and so when he said feeling good again, I'm like, okay, like I'm blowing at the lyrics in my head, and then he goes, but we're not doing that, I have a different question, and so I'm like, all right, man, what do you got?
Okay, so to really understand this, you've got to have some background of economics, and specifically some weird economics. So there's this thing called shock therapy in economics. Jeffrey Sachs was responsible for it in many ways in Poland. And it's like this series of policies that you have to put all together at once. And if they don't all go together at once, they're not going to fix the economy. But if you just say, hey, F it, we're doing it starting on this day, it's going to work. My theory, looking at the state of TCU in general, is that Sonny Dykes is employing shock therapy to the TCU football program, and that's why it's going so well. So if you look at all the facets right here, basically what he's done is said, everything that was going wrong last year, we're just going to do the opposite of that across the board. Fan engagement, we're going to go absolutely and steer into that. Open practices, we're gonna make sure like you could be here, you can take videos. My feelings about the strength and conditioning program are what they are, but they have produced results right now.
Can I just, shock theory aside, this is the Costanza.
Hmm.
This is everything I've done in my life has been wrong, so why don't I just do the opposite? Hello, I'm George, I'm bald, I'm unemployed, and I live with my parents.
It might be the Costanza.
Land a beautiful lady.
Those might be the same thing, but saying like, hey, just starting now, I'm going to do the exact opposite of what was going wrong, and I'm going to commit to it for a period of time. That feels like – it almost feels like Sonny Dykes had a list of here's what's going wrong with TCU's program, and he's doing everything the opposite to fix it.
No, and it seems to be working, judging by the 5-0 record. I mean, there were – yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that theory.
And so when I look at like the state of TCU, I don't even think about like wins and losses at this moment. I'm just thinking about general vibes. We talked about like being excited about it and everything. TCU's 5-0. They just got a ranked win on the road for the first time since probably Cain killed Abel. I think is probably the last time that that TCU has won. That they played on the Saturday after Cain killed Abel there. So there's a couple guys that are
right.
You know, but I mean, in terms of vibes, I don't know that there's a more impressive vibe turnaround from year to year in any program in college football than what TCU has gone from.
Every Saturday for like the last 3 years has been what fresh hell awaits us. What stupid thing is someone going to say, or what stupid play is TCU going to call? And this year it's been, I've used this term I think every week, a breath of fresh air. It's been, hey, this is going to be fun. We'll probably win. Maybe we'll lose. I don't know, but we're probably going to have fun doing it. And it's great. I can't imagine. I don't know. It just seems so obvious, I think.
Things should
be done this way.
It seems like, let the reader understand, it seems like there was some very low-hanging fruit that could have been taken advantage of to improve the TCU football program very easily.
It's I love taking the path of least resistance. It's the easiest thing in the world to do, literally. And it seems like TCU is doing the easy things. They're like, hey, instead of working hard to turn state meet to turn people into Pravda and to, you know, essentially create a closed media ecosystem, what if we just let people in? Or hey, what if we went out of our way to say really stupid things and take pot shots at people? What if we just like rolled with the vibe, said nice things about our own teams? And it, hey, instead of trying to win by one, we just try to have fun on offense, do cool stuff, and rack up the points. It's easier this way.
It's opposite day. Just doing the opposite. I like the Costanza. I wish I had thought of the Costanza, honestly. Grant, it's currently Wednesday, October 12th, 2022. Last year, we were, at this point, we were complaining about TCU passing it 11 times against Texas Tech in a 52-31 win. Grant, this was the infamous Beating Up Kindergartners podcast. The post-Texas Tech game. That was when that bit debuted. That was when that might legitimately have been the last time that Gary Patterson legitimately lost his S word at me on in the DMs. That was coming to the end. Our relationship was coming to the end. The TCU experiment was coming to an end. TCU would go on to rattle off.
I shortly stopped working in public education after that for reasons that aren't the same. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not a direct correlation, but you know.
Grant, we know that you podcast, but I can't turn a blind eye to the assaulting kindergartner segment that you indulged in. Anyway, so the vibes are entirely different. TCU currently sits, Grant, at 5-0. They're 2-0 in the Big 12. They've played one of the top five teams in the Big 12 and beaten them. They play another top five in the team in the Big 12 this weekend. Grant, before we break this down and preview this, I want to have a talk about calibrating expectations for this TCU team this year. Mm-hmm. Specifically in regards to a certain P word. I think you know what mm-hmm. P word I'm thinking of.
Yeah, George Carlin used it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. if TCU wins this weekend, I think we will hear in the national conversation the P word regarding TCU's ultimate end this off season, or this postseason rather, this kind of the culmination of this season. That P word of course being playoff. Only because the thought is that an undefeated Big 12 team would go to the playoff. TCU still has a lot of hurdles. But Grant, it feels a little bit to me like we have gone on maybe a coffee date and then two real dates with this TCU football team. And this weekend is the third date. We're going to find out what's going on here, I think, entirely this weekend.
TCU has changed their bed sheets. They bought a candle that's like $10 more than any candle they've ever bought before. Is this going back to my apartment or not? Like, are we serious about this?
You know what they've done, Grant? Because they've cleaned the little side flange of the toilet that's actually on the ground. Yeah. That's like dusty in your college house. But I read in Men's Health one day that in college that if you like a girl, she's gonna look and she's gonna notice that you cleaned around the side of the toilet for her. So I would do that a bunch. I never had success with that, but you know.
You know what I did the other day? I cleaned the dust out of a door frame. You know, you wipe down the door and everything, but you notice in the frame it can get a little dusty. Really makes the house look a lot easier. Parker, you mentioned hurdles. This is my hard transition out of that specific metaphor.
I could uncomfortably linger here as long as Oklahoma you want.
Oklahoma State is the last major hurdle. After this, TCU's two hardest games are Baylor and Texas. Baylor is beatable. Texas is on a mission, but they've also played two of the worst teams in the Big 12 to start their Big 12 season. This is, like you said, the dividing line. Is TCU a playoff competitor or not? If TCU wins this game, they'll be undefeated, likely ranked probably 10th, I would say, and have a guy that is shooting up the Heisman ranks, in my own mind, at quarterback. They have all the necessary ingredients for a team that is in the playoff discussion.
Yes, I want it to be said, we're not getting the cart above the horse, but I think there are some results that would have to happen. It would shock me that at TCU at 6-0 wouldn't jump Oregon, UCLA, Penn State, Ole Miss. Penn State might have a loss this weekend against Michigan, so that one makes it easier. Ole Miss plays Auburn. They're probably going to, and Oregon and UCLA play each other. So there's a clear path for TCU to be looking at a top eight team this weekend. Now, do I believe that they're a top eight team? I don't know, man. I'm not sure that I'm fully on board. I'm not sure that I'm fully there. But there's a path.
Let's draw this line. If TCU beats Oklahoma State this weekend, it doesn't mean that TCU is a playoff team, but it does mean that TCU is firmly in the playoff conversation. Do you think that's a fair divider?
I think that's fair. I think this is kind of the first great filter, if we're going to put this in Fermi paradox territory. Is TCU past the great filter? Are they ahead of the great filter? Or are they the first ones ever? We're going to have to figure that out. I think if TCU wins this weekend, Grant, we should just do some ayahuasca on Sunday night before the show and let the vibes take us.
I've priced an ayahuasca retreat in Costa Rica.
We're going to talk about that offline.
It's not as expensive as you think it is.
The accessibility and ayahuasca management these days, I really appreciate what they've done for the community, just making it that much easier to...
Okay, let's talk about football before I get in trouble. But, of course,
the Purple Theory podcast does neither endorse nor condone the ingestion of naturally grown plants for mental states. Yes, Grant, the Oklahoma State Cowboys come into TCU. They're also 5-0, a little bit rocky, if I do say so myself. Central Michigan, they won 58-44, but they were up pretty big, had a little bit of sweating there in the second half. They beat an Arizona State team that's pretty bad, kind of separated from them. Baylor, they needed a safety and a kick return touchdown to kind of distance themselves. And then last week against Texas Tech, man, they had the Red Raiders. I mean, at halftime, the game was 24-20, and they really just came away with one more touchdown in the second half to really pull away there. So haven't been super impressive, in my opinion, relative to my expectations.
No, I agree. I think they've been a little bit more effective offensively than I thought. And I think we'll get into all of this, of course. I think their defensive front has been as disruptive as advertised. Their defensive back end has left a little bit to be desired. Can I say one thing about that Oklahoma State Texas Tech game?
Please.
It's one of the hardest games to watch that I've ever watched. I watched it live last week. The colors, Oklahoma State was black, white, Texas Tech was white, black. And the, like, field at T. Boone Pickens is like so bright that everything just shone at you, and the Fox Sports 1 announcers yelled the entire time. It felt like everything was assaulting my senses. Highly recommend like just skipping highlights of that game. It's brutal.
Yeah. Well, and they both kind of wore the throwback things, and so it was just like two similar uniforms. They had stripes on the helmet. Yeah. They had a logo on the helmet, and they were just the inverse of each other. It was like that. Baylor game. There was like a Baylor basketball game. Who did they play? They were wearing like neon, their crazy ass neon yellow. And somebody else was wearing, maybe it was Oklahoma State, was wearing like their bright orange. And you were just, I can't watch this. I'm going to have a stroke.
Yeah. That didn't make a hill of beans as to what happened Saturday. But trust me, it was like an audio visual nightmare watching that game.
Yeah. It absolutely was. Grant, I have just some first principles here before we kind of dive into the units. I'll let you choose whether we start with the offense or the defense and kind of how you want to go from there. But Oklahoma State, 56th in EPA per play margin, 36th on offense, 88th on defense. TCU right now, 7th in EPA per play margin, 3rd on offense, 82nd on defense. So They are very similar to Oklahoma State in that they are offensively driven. The defense has some obvious issues that they're going to have to take care of and might be might be problematic later on. Yeah. But TCU is just a little bit, mean shifted, a little bit better, demonstrably better on offense overall. You adjust that for quality of opponent. That's probably going to flatten to TCU 15, Oklahoma State about 32. Not probably going to. That's definitely going to fly me too. I did the math. I did it. I adjusted it. And yeah, so interesting overall. Both teams positive in net field position. Really, you know, starting out well, kind of taking care of their special teams, and both have demonstrated abilities to pop off a special teams play there. But generally, I think these are two very similar teams who have been similarly untested in terms of national competition coming into this game.
Yeah, and untested in terms of Texas Tech is not a top 25 or 30 or 40 team, but Tech put Oklahoma State through the ringer on offense. We talked about that a little bit on Sunday with just spreading the ball out, throwing the ball, I think it was 62 times, and saying, look, we're going to be annoying as hell, and you're going to have to cover us every single play for like 4 hours. And Baylor obviously is a good team. I mean, their defense is stout and Shapen can throw the ball. So I don't think tested in terms of the metrics. I think tested in terms of scheme and in terms of, hey, we played some really pesky, annoying teams and we're still undefeated. So they at least passed that filter, if you will.
But for sure.
In terms of breaking, yeah.
They have the benefit of, I mean, Kansas is a good team this year, but they are still Kansas in many ways. I mean, Oklahoma State has played a road game at Baylor is probably the best game, the hardest game that either team has played to this yep. point. And so that's certainly decisive in terms of if they are legit, it's because the Baylor game was real and Baylor's good team.
TCU had to start the season, you know, at altitude on the road at night. I'm just throwing that out there.
And a rain delay into the Hornet's Nest. That is, I wish I knew the name of Colorado Stadium so I could have pulled that joke off, but...
And they had the wrong quarterback starting. And still won. Okay, let's talk about Oklahoma State's offense first. I think we did defense first last week for Kansas. Obviously, Spencer Sanders comes in as probably the most experienced quarterback in the Big 12. It feels like he's been there for forever. I've been impressed with his ability to run the ball this year. He's looked a lot more confident coming off of speed options. Had a good touchdown against, I believe it was Tech, for their second score. 61.5% completion rate. Averaging 8.3 yards per attempt, 12 TDs, 2 picks, average depth of target of 9.4, and an adjusted completion percentage of 71.8. Parker, this will surprise you. Spencer Sanders, above average to pretty darn good quarterback.
That was going to be a follow-up question, is Spencer Sanders good? He's very experienced. This is his fourth year starting, and at times he has looked limited. When the personnel hasn't been there, he has not really looked like he's a guy who can run a functioning offense. But when they have the pieces around him, and as he's matured, pretty competent, pretty good, pretty athletic college quarterback.
Yeah, I think he's firmly pretty good. I don't think he's very good. I think he's pretty good, but very firmly pretty good. This is so stupid, but that's how I would classify him.
No, I think that's a useful way to think about it. If I'm talking about like NFL, I'm like, yeah, he's probably not a quarterback, but position change candidate, maybe. I don't know. I think that's very plausible. That's less to do with, I kind of hate that. I hate that like, oh, his position change, whatever. But like the systems that the NFL are running, he's not running in college. I don't know if there's a direct translation to that in the NFL, but he's very clearly an athletic guy who's got a mind for the field. I could see that happening.
Yeah. With the long legacy of Oklahoma State quarterbacks succeeding, Mason Rudolph, Brandon Whedon,
that other white guy who was like 38 when he graduated.
who was the guy in between Rudolph? There was like one guy in between Rudolph and Sanders. I feel like his name was Tanner, but that might have been somebody else.
Taylor Cornelius. Is that who you're
Taylor Cornelius. Thank you. They're all the same.
I only remember him because of the solid verbal talking about UConn Cornelius and Junkyard Jim, James Washington.
Have you got his UConn Cornelius for Halloween?
No, that's so racist that you would ask me that.
Parker, consider it. Is all I'm
saying. Actually, I didn't celebrate Halloween growing up. We went to the Festival of Melons and Gourds. I don't really dress up.
Yeah, I'm sorry I asked.
That's very real.
Thank you for torpedoing my. But Sanders has an interesting like cadre of receivers to throw to. So Brennan Presley is Oklahoma State's leading receiver. 33 targets, 26 receptions.
Here's this. Speaking of UConn Cornelius, let's talk about the island of misfit toys. That is just a bunch of fast dudes that Mike Gundy's like, hey man, can you run fast? Cool, come on, let's go.
Yeah, like Presley is their leading receiver, and he lines up in the slot 96.3% of the time. Parker, his average depth of target is 7.1, and he averages 6.5 yards after catch. That is catching the ball in space and moving quickly.
That is horrifying to me. Horrifying.
Yeah. Think about, we'll get to this, and we'll talk about it on the reverse. Think about how in hell TCU's linebacker core is going to be, or poor Mark Perry is going to be matched up against Brennan Presley.
We'll get the best case, worst case in vaguer details now, but I will go and say that I can very clearly envision Jamoy Hodge and the terrible, horrible, no good day. And that's not a fault of Jamoy Hodge. I'm just saying,
it's
like,
not. It's
Gundy is looking at Hodge's pass coverage. He's looking at Perry over the top, and he's looking at Johnny Fire Hydrant Hodges and saying, yeah, I think we could probably do something here in the middle. We could probably exploit this.
Seems like an opportunity. And then on the edges, you have Braden Johnson, who suffered an injury in the Texas Tech game, but according to the Ocali, Oklahoma State student newspaper, Gundy has said he will play. So he and Bryson Green line up outside. Johnson averages 18.4 yards. That's average at the target. Green is 14.7. So Presley is underneath, and Johnson and Green are the guys going deep and getting those balls. Green has 4 touchdowns. Johnson has 3. Weirdly, Oklahoma State has not had a pass play over 50 yards this year, which doesn't seem very Oklahoma State.
Well, what's interesting about that is I wonder how much situationally that is, right? Because on passing, Grant, they're 25th in success rate, 46.8%. So almost one of every two passes is a successful play.
Yeah.
But they're 19th in EPA per pass. So that leads me to believe maybe they're striking well and maybe don't have that like burner after burner speed to kind of necessarily turn a 50-yard completion into a 100-yard completion. Or maybe they're super situationally explosive where they're like, hey, if we're 40 yards out, we're going to score. Their quality possession rate on offense is 35th, right? But their finishing drives, their points per ekle, is 13th at 5.26. So they're more explosive in finishing drives than they are at generating finishing drives. So it leads me to believe that maybe there's some kind of short field advantage that Gundy and Casey Dunn feel like they have with the specific guys that they have. Which would kind of explain that, hey, it does seem weird that the long reception is 49, right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It just seems, like I said, very unlike Oklahoma State. I mean, I'm just picturing games in the past where James Washington, for example, has broken away from a TCU defender and there's no one there to stop him or whoever it was.
Do you recall the abject horror in 2017 when TCU scored first and then Oklahoma State in like 13 seconds hit Jim Washington for a touchdown? And you were like, oh God, this is going to get so bad. It didn't. We were wrong, but we all felt that moment of horror. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a different type of Oklahoma State. They don't have the big tall guy that's also fast like James Washington. They just have a bunch of little fast guys. Turns out it still works.
Maybe I should have said this at the beginning and we could have framed it a little bit better. I'm creating this bit as I go. This is a very TCU Oklahoma State team, and it's a very Oklahoma State TCU team.
I like that comparison. Yeah, I think it's very much Spider-Man pointing at each other meme right now.
I am certain that by the end of the day on Thursday, Adam Lunt is going to have a 6-paragraph essay in my inbox about why that's not true at all. But I think it's a good, useful heuristic for us to kind of look at. It's just these teams are both good at what they're good at, but that is a little different than historically what they have been good at.
Yeah.
If I may take us in a direction there, Oklahoma State has historically been pretty good at rushing the ball, and that's really raised the floor on their offense. I think one problem this season is that their rushing efficiency has been really poor. They're 90th in EPA per rush on offense, 75th in success rate. So they're not very efficient, and they're not very explosive in the run rate. Grant, that's especially problematic because they're 56th in rush rate over expected. So that is a little bit pass heavy, but still very balanced. And so they're running the ball a lot and not generating a lot of positive value there.
Yeah. Look, Dominic Richardson is their leading rusher. He's ran the ball 87 times, averages 4.1 yards per attempt. Parker, he's only had 7 rushes over 10 yards. Not what you would call an explosive fella. Spencer Sanders, for reference, has rushed the ball 41 times, and he has 11 rushes over 10 yards.
Dom Richardson's longest run is 19 yards this season. He's had 87 attempts.
Yeah, man. Like, And I don't know if that's a function of the line not rush blocking or him just not having breakaway ability. Well, he averages 3.22 yards after contact, so he's getting hit pretty much a yard past the line of scrimmage every time. That's not the worst in the world. It's not good, but it's not... I don't know. I'm just very, very surprised at that.
Yeah, I think generally he's not bad, but he's not transcendental.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is important because, look, running backs don't matter past a certain threshold of talent. So you could hear this and be like, Parker, a couple years ago, weren't you pretty hardcore on that, like, Chuba Hubbard wasn't, like, the most amazing running back of all time because he was putting up big numbers at Oklahoma State? And I was like, no, their system's really good and they're just creating opportunity. Running backs don't matter. Conditional on hitting a certain threshold of talent. It might be the case that Dom Richardson has not crossed that threshold of talent. He's going to rush for 160 yards against TCU now. That's how this is going to work. But that would be my concern looking at this team as saying, oh, it doesn't feel like they kind of have any level of game changer in the run game.
Parker, Gunnar Gundy has a longer rush than Dominic Richardson this year.
I hope to God that is against UAPB. I need to know that. I'm looking that up right now.
I shouldn't have brought it up, but
it is. It is a 24-yard run against UAPB. Gosh, I love that. That's so funny to me.
Let's try and figure out if this is an offensive line thing. Because Oklahoma State's line, I thought coming into the year, was fairly experienced. And so far, they haven't really lived up to expectations. Caleb,
I feel like for 2 years in a row, I'm going back to the preview, and then I'll let you get your grades. I'm sorry. I cut in again there.
No.
Because, like, Caleb Etienne, you're a freak. Why are you not, like, the best left tackle in the Big 12 right now? Why? I wanted to believe for 2 years. I've been talking about you on the left side of the line saying, dude, you can do it. I don't know that he can do it.
No, his PFF grade, which, again, is subjective, but 44.3. Taylor Materko at left guard is a 53. Preston Wilson, who was hurt, he'll play. 54.1. The right side of the line is pretty decent. Hunter Woodard is at a 76.7. Jake Springfield, the tackle, is at a 72.5. But, like, Materko has allowed 9 hurries from the guard position, which is hard to do. And Etienne's allowed a sack.
Some of that is you played Jackson Player and Siaki Ika. Like,
sure.
Ika. Some of that is, like, who you've played, for sure. But also, you've played some pretty bad teams, and Spencer Sanders has still been pressured on 25% of dropbacks.
Yeah, only been sacked twice, and part of that is due to Sanders getting the ball out and scrambling. But yeah, still, it's
and 6 throwaways. He's actually been pretty smart. Yeah. So if I can, I guess we talked about him, but I'll say this kind of induction here. He's actually pretty discerning in terms of, like, his throwaways. His adjusted completion percentage. So his completion percentage on pressured dropbacks, Grant, is 42.9%, but his adjusted completion percentage is 69.6. So dude is either saying, I can make something happen, or I'm bailing entirely. Between scrambles and throwaways, he has, 11 scrambles, and no, six scrambles on pressure dropbacks, and he has 6 throwaways. So that's 12 of 48. That's 25% of the time he's saying, I can productively bail out of this situation.
And it's not like I don't think it's what Tanner Mordecai was doing. Like we saw when TCU played SMU, where he was just hucking the ball into the third row at the first sign of pressure, which was honestly, those are the best throws he made all game. But you're right. Sanders is a lot more discerning. He's probably had to be with this line in front of him.
Which is a little bit disappointing. Yeah. I thought the vision there was a little bit more in tune. Grant, along the interior offensive line, I'm actually pretty encouraged about what Dom Williams can do if we can keep him in the game consistently against this IOL.
Yeah, I mean, match him up. If you can match him up with Materko and Wilson and just kind of shift him left, I think there's ample room for success there. Really just attack that left side and just hope Wright can contain. That's obviously easier said than done, but that does appear to be the recipe for success when you're playing Oklahoma State.
Can I ask you, if you had at your disposal scheme withholding, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, you have TCU's 3-3-5 stack. You know you have Hodge, Winters, Brooks, Shad Banks at your disposal. The secret weapon, the Swiss Army knife, Shad Banks. how are you going to try and stop Spencer Sanders from scrambling all over your ass?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you be judicious. Maybe because one of those linebackers is going to have to help out in pass coverage. God bless us all. You bring your front three. Bring one guy. I'm trying to see who's been the most effective edge rusher for TCU. Maybe you put Dylan Horton on that side and say, hey, go get him, big guy. And then at linebacker, I don't know, because none of them rush really well. You know what? I want Johnny Hodges playing spy. He'll hit somebody. Or Mark Perry. Bring Mark Perry down to spy, because he's a good run fitter. There you go.
And kind of get more into that 3-4-ish kind of a look. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Because he's also bad at covering. So take him out of coverage and just say, hey, okay, you're going to spy Spencer Sanders. You're pretty fast. You're good at run fits. Like, find out where it goes and stop him.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if we don't see in some obvious passing situations a 3-4 that looks more like a 4-3 with Marcel Brooks lining up on the edge and just saying, hey, but you know what he did at LSU, pin your ears back and go get him. And saying, yeah, so I'm interested though. That's my biggest worry is Oklahoma State's going to get their big plays, right? They're really good at scheming and yep. saying, we're going to throw screens. We're going to run inside zone until you creep up. And then we're going to hit you over top. We're going to hit our really fast, shifty guys in space. That's going to spread you thin. I think Oklahoma State is going to get a couple big plays here. The question is, can TCU do two things? Can they, one, limit those big plays? We've seen that their long pass and their long run are not, you know, 60, 70-yard plays. Mm-hmm. Can they stop those and make Oklahoma State have to move the ball efficiently more so than explosively? So say you have to get efficiency points, not explosiveness points. And can they do that while productively boxing in Spencer Sanders so that broken plays don't absolutely blow up the TCU defense? That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I think this is really going to be, thinking back through the schedule, the first time with a 3-3-5 under Gillespie at TCU has seen a very good, or at least very fine, whenever we said he was, Spencer Sanders type quarterback that can run, can throw. Dylan Gabriel's also fine, but he got hurt in the first half. So did Jalen Daniels. Jason Bean scheme defendant and Mordecai's off. So this is the first time that defense has really been put to the test with a quarterback like this.
I think so. Because even like Jalen Daniels, he never really was just like chaotic Jalen Daniels against TCU. Yeah. It was, hey, we're going to do this triple option of I can pitch it or I can throw it. And TCU covered that extremely well. I don't think TCU is going to see Spencer Sanders in this like no man's land situation. They're going to be like, oh, if Spencer Sanders is running, stuff has already gone wrong. We've got to go find him. Yeah.
It's going to be a really interesting test.
He's also faster than both of them. I don't know if that's empirically true. I think that's off the top of my head true.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I would love to see Jalen Daniels and Spencer Sanders. I would love to see every Big 12 quarterback run a decathlon.
I'm trying to find a way where Max wins that. And I just.
Well, he ran track. He ran the 200. That's not like a.
He did.
That's not like a. I mean, also, I think he's got a little bit of girth. I think Max could do well in the decathlon. Grant, if TCU wins on Sunday, we will go line by. We will go event by event in the decathlon and pick who wins.
How far do you think Max Duggan could throw a discus? My column.
He could throw a discus under those mountains.
I bet he could. Speaking of defense, let's talk about the Oklahoma State defense. So we spoke about defense 2 minutes ago, and we're going to do it now. So obviously up front, I mean, say the names. Brock Martin, Tyler
They're
Lacy,
so scary.
Sione Ossie. They're terrifying, Parker. And then you throw in the linebackers. Xavier Benson, who we'll get to in coverage, but is good in support. They're just terrifying. That whole front four or five are just an absolute unit.
Look, you. So I think Lacy, Oliver, Martin, and...
Ossie
maybe had 20 pressures last year. I should look this up because I have the stats right here. They had five guys with 20 pressures, and I think they returned four. So they had Martin, Oliver, Lacy all back. They lost Harper and Rodriguez. So they brought back three of the five guys who had 20 pressures, and they added Trace Ford, who was hurt all last year, back into this. Yep. You can't replace Malcolm Rodriguez. Absolutely. like, unironically, I said this about Chad Banks a minute ago as a joke, like, Malcolm Rodriguez is a Swiss Army knife on defense. He's the positionless player. He is what the NFL wanted Isaiah Simmons from Clemson, who plays for the Cardinals now, I think, to be. He is legitimately just a guy who can go get the ball. Jalen Petrie, who plays for the Texans, it was at Baylor, is also that kind of guy. Really kind of like the next generation defender. You can't replace him. But man, it's a lot easier to try and replace this production when you have four, you know, basically heavyweight wrestlers on the edge position. Derek Mason runs that 2-4-5, right? Not a 4-2-5, 2-4-5. They can afford to play like six linebackers because they just have these freaks up front.
It's the money ball. They're going to recreate him in the aggregate. Like, yeah, we can't afford a Malcolm Rodriguez, but we can afford, you know, all these other guys that are combining in.
That was me doing the Billy Beane snap when you say the thing and I don't have to say it. I'm going to point at the kid.
He gets on base. I mean, Tyler Lacy, look, he's got 9 hurries. He's got 2 sacks. Brock Martin has 7 hurries, 3 sacks. Colin Oliver has 9 hurries, 3 sacks. It's terrifying, Parker. I want to say one thing. So I looked at how opposing quarterbacks, so Blake Shapen and Baron Morton, sorry, I forgot his name, performed while under pressure against Oklahoma State. Because I think there is a little bit of, hey, when the pressure gets there, hell yeah, and when it doesn't, there's an opportunity for big plays. I'm just going to throw a couple stats at you and you tell me what you think they mean. Okay? Against Tech, Oklahoma State blitzed 6 times. Morton had a 9.7 yards per attempt. Completed attempt compared, or just, sorry, 9.7 yards per attempt completed to 5.7 when he wasn't blitzed. So bigger plays when blitzed.
That feels right. Like you're closing your eyes and chucking it.
Sure, and it worked because Tech has some weird voodoo passing. But he was pressured 23 times. So not blitzed.
Oh my God. Wait, pressured. No, sorry. Say that again.
He was blitzed
9 times, but he was pressured 23 times?
No. He was blitzed 6 times and was pressured 23 times.
My God.
That's how good that front end is. Yes.
That's an extra defender. That's basically an extra defender. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And get this, his yards per attempt, 4.1 compared to 6.6, and he was sacked 4 times. So Oklahoma State, when they blitz, is really giving up a lot on the back end. And the same kind of holds true with Shapen. He was blitzed 9 times, 10.3 yards per attempt, and a touchdown when he was blitzed, compared to 8.1 yards per attempt, 1 touchdown, and 2 picks when he wasn't blitzed. But when he was pressured, which he was pressured 12 times, 7 yards per attempt compared to 9.2.
And
they don't need to blitz.
No, they don't need to blitz. And let me tell you, that Baylor game could have been a lot worse. Gavin Holmes, I think, had 3 drops of very, like, 10 to 15-yard plays in that Oklahoma State game. Because, Grant, when they can't get pressure, when the quarterback actually throws the ball, dude, they are 52nd in defensive success rate against the pass. They are 100th in EPA per pass. They will let you get big, explosive chunk plays on defense if you can just stay alive long enough to throw the ball. Grant, why am I worried about that? What has Max Duggan not been good at this year?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, Parker. Well, he holds on to the ball too long.
Max Duggan holds on the ball a little too long. His sack to pressure rate is 2nd in the Big 12 at 22.9%. So if you know, 22% of all pressures turn into sacks for him, almost 23. His time to throw is 2.56. That also ranks towards the bottom of the Big 12. He's a little indecisive, which kind of is the trade-off of, hey, we want you to be more aggressive downfield. We want you to make these reads. We don't want you to just bail every time. That to me feels like a recipe for disrupting this TCU offense is kind of getting to Duggan, making sure that he can't breathe and think about these reads.
Yeah, and Sonny had a point in the press conference. I'm 90% sure it was Sonny. It might have been Tay Barber that said, look, like, the one thing I noticed about Max this year is that he's not just locking on to his first read. He's progressing from his first to his fourth read, and that's a sign of maturity. Absolutely it is. You do not have time to do that against Oklahoma State. You better scheme your way out of that.
Maybe you don't. Yeah. So
yeah.
Because some high school wrestling champs are going to come be up in your
beat your ass. Nonsense.
Did you know that Malcolm Rodriguez and Brock Martin were both on the Oklahoma State wrestling team until Gundy said no? They were both multi-state champions in Oklahoma in high school. And the Oklahoma State wrestling team, the wrestling coach was like, hey, come out for me. They went out and Gundy said, no, guys, this is too important. You can't do this.
That sucks. By the way, I just realized being pressured 23 times, Morton threw 62. That's like one out of every three dropbacks you have guys in your face. How miserable that must have been in your first college start.
There's a joke in here that I can't land about like Russian roulette and like Lubbock roulette and the offense something. Yeah. Just let the reader, you guys feel that's Mad Lib. You guys figure that one in. That's funny somewhere. I can't land it, but.
But so let's talk about those guys on the back end for Oklahoma State that are kind of, if you will, the weak link. Jason Taylor at safety has the most snaps of anyone on the Oklahoma State defense. And his PFF rating is 61.8 for those that are interested, but he's been, let's see, targeted 23 times, gave up 12 receptions, including a 73-yard play and a touchdown. I assume those are the same play. You look at the other corners. Jabbar Muhammad has actually, I think, played pretty decently. He's been targeted 39 times, which is a ton. Gave up 23, but only 10.1 yards per reception. And I say only, but listen, when you target that many times, you're going to give up some big plays. So
here's what I would love the PFF data to be able to show me, but no one listens to me. I want to know how many of those times were third down. Because looking at a little bit of film, my suspicion is that they are coming after his ass on third downs.
Yeah.
And that's why there's not big play breaking ability. It's like a possession reception. It's Blair Conright in 2020, right? It's like, hey, we're just going to throw you the ball and then fall to the ground. And that's all we need.
Yes, please. Please do not try to run the ball.
Yeah.
I'm begging you not to run the ball. Corey Black, the other corner, has been targeted 13 times, gave up 10 catches, and for a yards per reception of 15.6. It gets worse when you get to the linebackers.
Yeah, a lot of hay to be made there, which makes me very excited about Tay Barber and Darius Davis and Jared freaking Wiley underneath, because these linebackers are not really good at coverage at all. Mason Cobb is okay, 73 PFF grade. He's been targeted 12 times, but 10 receptions, 8.3 yards per reception. So what that grade basically means is like, hey, because of the scheme, there's really not a lot you could do here, and you did the best you can. That makes me a little bit encouraged about TCU kind of middle of the field, maybe being able to get some of those 8-10 yard gains with a little bit of the combination of the hefty guys and the speedy guys there. Benson behind him, pretty big drop off in coverage ability. If they can get matchups on him, he's given up 238 yards on 26 targets, 11.3 yards per reception. That's a very fruitful target for sure.
This game screams mesh, does it not?
Well, it's fun, I mean, Grant, because the last 2 years we've been yelling run mesh, and this year they actually run it. And I think that if TCU ideally could have gotten Spivey the ball a couple more times in the early games, Oklahoma State be worrying about that. So when they run the Spivey mesh where Spivey just stands there like a door and Barber goes underneath, that would be a lot more productive. But I still think TCU will try and do that and say, hey, if you want to have a linebacker covering Tay Barber, we're going to throw the ball to Tay Barber a lot.
Yeah, you know, we asked our listeners, you know, obviously, who's your offensive MVP, who's your defensive MVP? I think on offense, if you're going to pick a wide receiver as an MVP, don't pick the guy that was the MVP the game before. That's kind of how TCU has operated this year. Force feed the ball to QJ. Okay, now we're going to run Darius Davis underneath 8 times, and he's going to run a bunch of bubble screens. I think with all the focus on Quentin Johnston from last week's amazing performance, this is the opportunity for the underneath guys to really make some hay if Oklahoma State's not careful to shut that down.
I totally agree. I'm vamping for a second because I'm pulling up Oklahoma State. I actually want to see how they've done with kind of those intermediate guys in their Big 12 games. And the PFF system is just very hard to navigate. So I'm not doing that with any amount of dexterity or speed. Here we go. Texas Tech receiving. Okay, Cleveland, who is... he's wide 94% of the time. Bradley was their second guy. He's wide. Interesting. So actually against Texas Tech, the outside guys really beat them. Two guys that I don't think whose names we did not say on the preview really beat Oklahoma State there. That's interesting to me. I wonder if I can get the Baylor game as well in immediate time. Parker looks up data.
I can talk for a minute just because I think I also want to just touch a little bit on Oklahoma State's run defense, which I think generally is fairly decent. But you look at the tackles here, they're not very spread out. Mason Cobb has 10 tackles. Brock Martin has 14. Con Oliver has 14. And Trace Ford. Oh, excuse me. No, I'm so sorry. Those are pressures. My apologies. This has been a great statistical episode of the Purple Theory Podcast. The top leading tacklers for Oklahoma State are linebacker, safety, corner, safety, safety. So while Lacey and Brock Martin and all those guys are great up front in the pass rush, they're not necessarily gumming up the works in the run game. It's a lot of kind of second level tackles for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Just to follow up on my point as well, I'll read some stats about Oklahoma State's run defense here in a second. Against Baylor, Monterey Baldwin, 84% in the slot, and then Ben Sims, the tight end, were really kind of the killers there. So that holds the underneath kind of middle guys, I think, could do a lot of damage for TCU against this Oklahoma State team. The rush defense, 52nd in EPA per rush, but 54th in rushing success rate. Grant, one thing that's very encouraging as a TCU fan, Oklahoma State is only 16th in echo rate and quality possession rate on defense, allowing the 16th best quality possession rate, but they're 98th in points per quality possession. So TCU absolutely can get a big play touchdown. If they can sustain a drive across the 40, all the better. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to blow this defense wide open. One thing that warms my heart, Grant, Oklahoma State is 113th on early downs EPA, first and second down. TCU is third. So Oklahoma State really not good at getting teams behind the sticks. I think when TCU's offense is stalled, it's because they've run on first and second down and it's like, oh, it's third and eight and shoot, we've got to do something. And then Andrew Coker is definitely going to commit a false start on third and eight and we've got to punt it now. So those early down successes, I think, are really important for TCU, and Oklahoma State's defense is not really good. A lot of those pressures, again, speaking of things I wish PFF would show us, I imagine a lot of those pressures come on obvious passing situations. I think just as an edification exercise for everyone, I would love to see pressure rate as a function of expected pass rate for Oklahoma State, because I imagine that is extremely linear and that the higher, more obvious pass situations is going to be most of their pressures. If TCU can avoid that third and eight, that third and long, I think that they can mitigate some of these pressures with a credible run threat.
I like it. Parker, do you want to do best case, worst case first, or let our listeners give some predictions?
You know, we always go to the listeners, and we have so many this week. Let's do best case, worst case before we pollute ourselves with the opinions of the masses, and then we can go after them, and then give ours at the end.
The hoi polloi. You know what? Let's go worst case, best case. Let's do that. Let's get a little optimism in here. Worst case. Boy, I mean, this is a, like you said, the linebacking core for TCU is in hell. The offense can't get anything going. It's the same Oklahoma State game we've seen time and time again where TCU goes into Stillwater and lays a total egg. This could easily be something like, I don't think Oklahoma State's going to run rampant on offense, but I think there is a world where the TCU offense sort of flies or falls flat. So give me 31-17 Oklahoma State.
Ooh, yeah, I can absolutely see that. I think my worst case scenario involves Dom Richardson having a big day because TCU's linebackers are so freaking shook. They're in the blender and really being forced to make hard decisions and getting penalized for that. And so I definitely see that being a little more of a hardy game, a little more physical of a game. But I think I can very realistically see a worst case scenario where Oklahoma State scores 38 points and TCU puts up 20 in a garbage time touchdown.
Yeah.
That's depressing. I hate starting with worst case. I like talking myself out of the best case instead of talking myself into the best case.
But now we can talk ourselves into the best case, which is that the exact same thing happens in reverse. Davis and Tay go off. The defense is able to limit Spencer Sanders. And those guys on the outside really don't get anything for Oklahoma State. Dom Richardson continues to be who we think that he is. And this might be Dominic Williams' coming out game with the weak side of that Oklahoma State line. So give me TCU 34, Oklahoma State 24, best case.
I certainly won't project that TCU could do something like 63-17 from last year. But I will say Sonny Dykes is a son of a gun in a good way. That's a compliment. And I think last year what happened is it was 3-7 TCU down to Oklahoma State after the first quarter, and then Oklahoma State rattled off just all kinds of ungodly points.
I blocked the game out of my mind.
Yeah, well, there's no play-by-play on ESPN. I said that on the BetUS show today. No play-by-play on ESPN, so it doesn't exist. But 21 points in the second quarter for Oklahoma State there. I think that we could see the scripted drives be a little bit of a trade-off. It could be close. Mm-hmm. At the first quarter, maybe we're looking at 14-14, and then TCU pulls away. And in the second half, Sonny doesn't take his foot off the gas and just says, we're going to work through this. We're going to keep running. We're going to keep running. And TCU could win this. I could see this like 42-24 as TCU.
Okay.
With the Sam Jackson touchdown. I think that's best case scenario where TCU says, we're going to avenge the loss from last year. We know you can't run very well on offense, and so we're going to be able to kind of lock down your explosive passing plays. We know how to contain Spencer Sanders. I don't think that's very likely, but I can see a path for that if TCU can hit some of these big plays. If TCU has been kind of hiding the, how do we get Darius Davis and Quentin Johnston involved at the same time? I think there's a beast there. Not talking myself into that, just saying I think that's best case.
You're going to have to do it eventually. Might as well do it now if you have a plan to get both of them open in the same game. As far as predictions go, my gut tells me Oklahoma State's going to win this game. I think it's going to be incredibly evenly matched. I think 38-35 Oklahoma State, and it's going to break your heart.
Oh, yeah, that feels about right, man. I did. So, okay, I do my numbers. And I saw, Grant, this opened at -2 for TCU and has moved up to as much as -4. That's absurd to me. I did a little power rating, just saying like kind of the traditional Vegas way of like, let me power rate each position group and then compare these teams. And I, even doing that, I had Oklahoma State -0.5, including home field advantage against TCU. I think that the concerns are that they are fraudulent because of their schedule have really been overstated. And I think both teams will score in the 30s. I'm going to go 33-31. I'm gonna say TCU wins.
Hell yeah.
I love it. Hell yeah. I hate it. I'm very nervous about it. I don't know, but I think that that's what's going to happen.
Hell yeah. I love it. All right. Let's run down some fan predictions. There are a lot of these. We're going to speed through them. You ready?
Can I point out one before we do all of that? I want to shout out Ryan Roberts. Works for and with me over at RPM, and I he does a lot of film stuff. So I asked him, just for, you know, for TCU fans, what were some Oklahoma State guys that they should keep an eye on in terms of like who might be in the NFL, you know, prospects? He pointed out Colin Oliver and Tyler Lacey and Brock Martin. All three of those guys he thinks could stick on a roster in the next level. And then he said he mostly is interested in Spencer Sanders for the pure volatility, just to say like, hey, he's got these raw tools. Can he do anything consistently enough, to kind of be an NFL guy? Ryan has him as a guy he's watching as well. So just, from a really sharp NFL scout, kind of a guy, I wanted to point that out about the team. He predicted Oklahoma State 38, TCU 27, which is basically a field goal off of what we both projected in Oklahoma State's favor.
These two teams are really evenly matched. Okay. Marshall Weber, friend of the pod, TCU 42, Oklahoma State 31, Darius Davis, MVP. Funky Town Frog, OSU 30, TCU 34, MVP Darius Davis. And he says, Riley better be scheming a lot of one replays and rolling out play action for this game. Amen, brother.
What have you been saying for 2 years? Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Clint Foster, Frogs made a shootout 42-38, and he plugs his YouTube channel. Clint, we're not doing that here. Pay us, buddy.
Go subscribe to Clint's YouTube channel.
Subscribe to Clint.
It came up the other day. I tweeted about this, but I searched for the TCU game on YouTube TV and didn't realize that it was on, that the Tarleton game wasn't anywhere. And Clint Foster's face just came up on my TV screen in front of God and everybody.
He does says Max Duggan Heisman trend go woo woo, which I agree. Brief 15-second aside from David Lay Williams, who's a political theorist at DePaul. You guys mentioned the veil of ignorance a lot. I assume you took some philosophy classes at TCU. Tell us your favorite philosophy professors and classes. I took political philosophy. Dr. Samuel Arnold and Dr. Molly Scudder were both awesome.
I knew Dr. Scudder from something. I took law and economics from three professors. One of them I can't remember. One of them was Quinn, who is a really good guy in the economics department. And one of them was like the most traditional baseball loving old guy with white hair and a white beard philosophy professor. And I don't remember, but the oh, I was going to drop the H.A. Hart book about the law that's sitting on my bookshelf right now because I'm a pretentious douche that keeps books from college. But yeah, I can't remember. That's the only actual philosophy class I took. I have done a lot of informal philosophy. But only
yeah, he won't shut up about informal philosophy.
What is that guy's name? Stephen? No, because okay, Quinn's name is Stephen. I can't remember. This is not good audio. I took a philosophy class.
My first class in college was Intro to Philosophy. Okay, and I've only been more pretentious ever since. Master of Activities, J.D. Saylor's, TCU 38.58, OSU 36.78, according to his model, which I believe is your model. I love this. Offensive MVP, Garrett Riley. Defensive MVP, Joe Gillespie. I like that. Scheme around, win a game. Nigel, Tacos and Therapy, Oklahoma State 45-44. J-Bar, the Barker Lounger, 49-28 Frogs. Demonic crushes the I feel like I'm saying demonic, but Demonic Williams crushes the interior, proclaiming in his post-game press conference, "I'm a man, I'm 18. Big fan of that. Toad Heffy at D. Duncan Soul. Lots of offense. Teams are surprisingly similar. TCU 41-38. The Uninformed Frog, 35-28 and many beers deleted. Trayshawn, Oklahoma State 42-38. Doug Anders, TCU 35-31. With Abe Kamara as the defensive MVP, that'll be the bounce back game of the century. Ray Cartwright, 2-0 TCU. Okay. Oh, I think he's talking about soccer. Hateful Aider, 41-31 Cowboys. He was an Oklahoma State fan. TCU leads in the half and they figure out how to stop QJ in the second. Connor Miller, 40-37 TCU. Rangers fan. TCU pulls off the win 38-34 and goes into the top 10. Sanju Singh, TCU 38-28. Henry Marshall, an Oklahoma State fan, 38-31 Oklahoma State, but QJ goes off. Doug Redgrave, 34-28 TCU. Andrew Forrest, 42-38 TCU. Greg Hawley, 38-31 Oklahoma State. Carpe Duggan, hell yeah, 34-31 TCU. Cole Barker, 38-34 TCU. And I don't think this is the real Bogdan Bogdanovich, but I could be wrong. TCU 31, Oklahoma State 24. So a lot of very close, like early 30s, late 28.
Yeah,
predictions there.
That sounds about right. Richard Galvin was one of the professors. I can't remember the other guy's name though. I know everybody was sitting on the edge of their seats, just waiting for me to remember. If you know the name, everybody knows who he is. The old crotchety guy in the philosophy department at TCU taught law and economics. Somebody DM me. I'm going to lose my mind.
Fun fact, in that first philosophy class, I found out later that my roommate Fallon, who married my friend Joey, was the TA for that class.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, we found that out like 5 years later after I took it. Anyway, wild stuff.
That's crazy. Did you know that Kennedy's secretary was named Lincoln and Lincoln's secretary was
Shut up.
Philosophy of Law by H.A. Hart. I remembered it. I have it on my bookshelf. I remember the name of it. I feel good about that.
Did you know that Michael Collins had an 82.4 QBR against Kansas? Okay, let's talk.
Did you know that Terry Bradshaw went to Louisiana?
Going around the Big 12, this podcast is an hour and 10 minutes long already. Baylor is a 3.5-point favorite in a Thursday game at West Virginia. I like Baylor, and I'll take the under at 54-2 if you're offering.
Yeah, what do they know, man? I don't have Baylor anywhere near 3 points. I have that way more in Baylor's favor. Very low on West Virginia.
Yeah, what a turnaround that is for you. Okay, let's see.
Well, they got rid of Jared Daigie. What do you expect?
I have no hope. No hope.
I will not sit here and be ridiculed for talking myself into every Big 12 team and then pretending like those previews were anything beyond that.
Yes, but I tried to get you out of your West Virginia thing. Okay, the other two games in the Big 12. Kansas is an 8-point dog at Oklahoma. I don't know how to read this game. I think Oklahoma covers, but I don't know.
Especially, so one very funny that Lance Leipold is smoking out the unfaithful before he takes a job, or at least starts talking about a job. You can go to Twitter if you don't know what that means. Jalen Daniels maybe being healthy would be a big deal, but I think Dylan Gabriel being healthy would be a bigger deal in terms of this Oklahoma team. I think this is an overreaction. I don't know that they're a favorite. I would lean towards Kansas being close, but I still think Oklahoma should win this outright.
Yeah. And the other one is Iowa State is a, Jesus Christ, is a 17-point dog at Texas. Don't bet this game. That's
no, I bet Iowa State. I took it on the BetUS show. I took it on Parker's previews. I think 17. Matt Campbell has lost two games by more than by double digits since 2020. The first one was the first game back from 2020 where they didn't have enough spring practice and they lost to Louisiana, I think. And then the second one was an Iowa game where it was like a one-score game and they gave up a punt return fumble or something, like some weird special team score. They do not get blown out under Campbell. Say what you will about them. And I have, and I will continue to. They really don't get blown out. 17 is a disrespectful line here, I think.
Parker, noted Iowa State Cyclone defender. Okay, let's go around the country and look at the other top 25 games. Well, we'll start with College Game Day. Tennessee hosting Alabama. Man alive. It's going to be a really fun game. You should watch this game. I highly recommend you do so. I have Bama as a touchdown favorite. Am I seeing that correctly?
I think, yeah, it's oscillated based on the
news about
Bryce Young. Raw numbers, not knowing whether Bryce Young is playing, have this Bama by 10. Do not like the Tennessee defense. Don't know that Tennessee's offense is going to be able to score as much. Alabama's big weakness has been explosiveness on the pass game on offense. 54th in EPA per pass. Tennessee is 98th in EPA per pass. They will let you pass the ball.
Fair enough. I like this game because it's going to get so deeply weird. Two very weird teams. NC State is a 3.5-point dog at Syracuse.
I wish Devin Leary were healthy so we could actually get an answer to the question, is Syracuse good? But if he doesn't play and Syracuse wins, we're going to have 6-0 Syracuse, who's not a good football team.
Tell your children about 6-0 Syracuse. Michigan is a touchdown favorite hosting Penn State. People are getting down on Michigan, and I don't know why. I like Michigan here. They haven't played anybody, but...
It's like the... it's the backlash of high expectations and saying like, hey, you beat UConn 58-0 or whatever. UConn is nobody, so actually you're bad. Like, that doesn't follow. It's not a syllogism. It's not logically sound, but it's what happens. It's a bias.
UConn has as many wins as both Oklahoma and Texas A&M do this season.
UConn is, shout out to Alex Kirshner, UConn is normal bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Kentucky is a 4-point dog hosting Mississippi State. Is Will still out?
He's day to day. I think he's going to end up playing. I think Stoops is being coy. Kentucky's fake, dude. They're fake.
Yeah. I'm taking, and I think Mississippi State might be real.
Mississippi State's real. Mississippi State has offensive linemen. Man, they are real.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're real.
That's terrifying. And the last top 20 matchup is, Utah. It's a 3.5-point favorite hosting USC. I'm throwing my chips in the USC basket. Give me the Trojans here.
Yeah, my dumbass took USC under 9.5 preseason as one of my best win total bets. And so let me tell you, my not dumbass is betting USC spread every week to try and reclaim some of that and hedge a little bit against it.
All right. Parker, anything else we need to touch on before we sign off here?
No, I think this has been a fun and appropriately chaotic Oklahoma State podcast preview. We haven't mentioned coaches wearing t-shirts, which I feel like is just a barometer of how well both of these football programs are doing, that we're not talking about off-field nonsense with either of them. Should be a fun matchup. We'll be really nice kind of filter litmus test for, all right, who's real? Somebody's got to win the Big 12, and it might be Texas, but if it's not going to be Texas, who's it going to be?
Going to be one of these two teams. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. You can find me on Twitter at Grant McGalliard. It's spelled exactly like it sounds. He's Parker Fleming. He is at Stats of War. He just finished, I think today, recording the second BetUS show of the week. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, we did two this week, and they were really good. Man, we're setting records for viewership. We're about to hit 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is just absurd and flattering. And hey, if you're bored at work at noon Central Time on Tuesday and Wednesday, and not even if you want to hear me talk, if you want to hop in the chat for the BetUS NCAA show is a thing of its own. People come in there, they're making friendships, they're talking picks, they're reacting to us. It's a very fun and kind of organic thing that's happening there. So hop on, stop on by. It's really good. And obviously Gary and Kyle are great with their picks. They're just so smart, dude. So tune into that for sure.
Sounds Sounds great. Hey, let's beat Oklahoma State, shall we? Parker, go Frogs.
Go Frogs.